This morning we're looking at, as we continue our series in Family Matters, we've been looking at everything from how God made you, how God made me, God made us, God makes people, God makes marriages, God makes husbands, God makes wives. And this morning we're going to look at how God makes daughters. Now, I'm a man, I don't understand that. But God's given me a number of years to begin to learn it. God makes daughters as princesses. And next week we'll look how God makes sons as knights. God makes daughters as princesses. What's that mean? There's a verse in Genesis I want us to look at. God changed Abram's name in Genesis 17 earlier in the chapter from Abram to father to Abraham, father of nations, father of peoples. In that same context, he talks about how they're going to have a child together. And he also changes Sarah's name. As for Sarai, your daughter, your wife, you're no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. Now, there's a play on words there. Both words have the idea of a princess. But one has the idea of a princess or princess of Yah. The other one has the idea of a princess of people. And he goes on to say that. He talks about a fullness of Sarah. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. And I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. So God makes princesses. He makes daughters. We can't make a daughter. Well, biologically we can, but that's all. We can't make a daughter. God makes princesses. He changes Sarai's name to Sarah because now a multitude of people will come from her. And the indication is that they will be blessed and she'll be blessed through that multitude of people. When it comes to making daughters, if you don't get involved, believe me, others will. As a father, you don't get involved, guys in her life will. If you don't get involved as moms and dads, the culture will, the world will, the system will, Satan will, her own selfishness will. Where are you as a daughter? Where are you as a daughter? Where are you as a female, as a woman? And by the way, if you're a 75-year-old lady here this morning, you're a daughter. And you're a woman and you're a female. Where are you as a daughter? Our culture, you know, our culture is either about Miss America or miscellaneous. Isn't that where it goes? I mean, we have a culture that's all messed up and people are trying to either be like a Miss America, and if they're not, they basically feel like they're a miscellaneous. They're insignificant. They have nothing to offer, nothing to give. And as a result of all these misses, when people aren't directed by God and aren't directed by parents who love them, as a result, all kinds of things take place. Miscarriage. Instead of carrying out justice, it's miscarried. They're misdirected. They're misdirected. Misunderstood. Is that who you are as a female or as a woman? Misunderstood? Or maybe you get involved in mischief? Are you misplaced? Are you misplaced? Are you in the wrong place? Are you being misused, misinterpreted, mistrusted? It's imperative that we connect with our daughters. It's imperative that we connect with God. It's imperative that daughters connect with God. If not, you will be misinterpreted and mistrusted, and the causes will become misery and miserable. A lot of people are living out that line. What's God saying, though? What's Christ's perspective on what's it mean to be female? A couple of weeks ago, we looked at what's it mean to be a female. A female literally means, the Hebrew and Greek words, a couple of words, means to take something in and make something beautiful out of it. And so to be female, is, in one sense, is to be a missionary. To be female is to take something in under God's direction. So a missionary is someone who literally is taking something in under God's direction, and then they're on a mission. They make something beautiful out of it for the glory of Christ. That's what it means. I'd like to ask my daughter Sarah to come up. We're going to kind of do this message together. Is that okay? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah, give her a hand. How you doing, hon? Oh, thanks. I might need that. All right. Doing okay?
I guess I'm supposed to turn on.
Yeah, it'll come on. Good.
Here.
Hey, have a seat here, kiddo.
All right.
In fact, we got here and she said, "Where's the stools?" I said, "Oh, I'll take care of it."
I'm not standing for half an hour.
You know, that's a fee.
I don't get paid for that.
Whoa, thanks. Well, thanks. I get to sit down. Isn't that great?
Ah.
Now you see where I got it. Okay. So what's going on? Who defines you? How are you defined? Sarah's a princess. January 10th, 1976, a bicentennial baby. That's who we had in our life, and God brought Sarah into our life, and we called her Sarah because she was a princess and is a princess. So we have a number of questions that during the week we've looked at some questions, and there's some pictures. How do you get from here to there? That's Sarah and I when she was, man, that's 37, 38 years ago, Sarah. And then now here she is with her husband Guy and her four kids, Enzo, Lucas, Stella, and Rocco. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about them, right? So how do you get from here to there? What's a daughter to do? How does a daughter raise her parents, and how are parents involved in their lives? What we did this past week is I asked some of our staff members, what are some questions you would ask about dads and daughters and daughters in a family? So they put some questions together, and then I gave these questions to Sarah and Guy who went through these questions, and they added some and changed some. And so what we have here is about 10 questions this morning in your notes, if you have them, if you want to take a look at them. And we're going to look at those 10 questions and kind of get a response from Sarah and from both of us. And I guess the first question is, what did your parents do to help you grow into who you are today? If initially came out, what did your parents do what was right? And she said, we need to change that.
Revise.
Yeah, I tell you, that was misdirected, I guess. So anyway, what did your parents do to help you grow into what you are today? And I get a chance to respond, too, in case I need to.
That's okay.
So what's going on, Sarah?
Well, I took a bunch of notes just in case. I completely lost my mind when I got up here, but... I think even from the very beginning, my parents always valued family, so we always had that instilled in us, me specifically as a daughter. They just tried to love us the best that they could, and that is a journey and a process in and of itself when you're trying to become a parent. Now that I am one, it's a total evolution and journey. So some of the things that my parents did were simple, like... My mom made us breakfast most mornings, and we had breakfast as a family. My dad was always trying to do a devotion while we're eating, and, you know, at some point we're just like, let's just eat and forget the devotion. But we were all together, and we would go on our merry way to school. We always had dinner together. It got a little tricky in the high school years with sports and whatnot, but there was always a meal, and my mom always tried to pull us together around the table. And I think that was really important, and it seemed so easy and simple. My parents, both of them individually, would come to school and sit down at our lunch table with our friends and us. I know it seems a little weird, and my friends loved it. They're like, your dad comes to school, he'll sit with you and eat. Your mom, I mean, sometimes he'd bring me a McDonald's or his own lunch. You know, we'd just sit and eat and hang out and just be where I was and know who I was hanging out with, who my friends were, and get to know them. Yeah, he stood up for me. There were some times I was getting harassed at the bus stop when I was like 10 or 12, and came and do a little throwdown for me with some people. But
I handled the situation.
Yeah, he protected me. So that was good. I knew that they would let me handle it, I think, as much as they could let me. And then there was a point where he did need to be involved, and so... He did do that. He showed up and helped me in that way. Specifically, my dad would come into bed with me at night, lay down, lights are off. We just sit or lay and chat about the day or whatever was going on in life, sports, family. And I just remember laying in bed. It was dark, just having his presence and his warmth. And then he'd just pray before I would go to sleep. So that was something that he and I have special in that way. We always took a lot of vacations. One tradition we have is going to Lake Arrowhead, and that's my dad's oldest sister. They have a house there. So we would do that every year, and there are some years where we spent the whole entire summer down there. So that was fun tradition. And lastly, I wrote that both my parents always instilled in me that I was beautiful for who I was and I was smart. They always told me, though, that that was from the Lord. It was nothing of my own, and that my true beauty was really in who He made me to be. It wasn't outward.
You know, we enjoyed you, Sarah. And what Sarah said about eating meals together was so important as a family. There was a point when she was in high school basketball. They had practice after school. But in this particular year, the coach said, we're going to start having 6:30 practice. The school started about 7:30, 7:45. At that point, we lived in Seattle. And so the coach said, we're going to start having, for the next few weeks, 6:30 practices in the morning. And Sarah said, well, I can't make it. And he said, why? She said, we eat breakfast together as a family. He didn't know what to do there. So she's like, I guess you're going to have to talk to my dad. He never did talk to me. We still ate breakfast together as a family. And the what was weird about that, what was good about that, some of the other girls, I remember Sarah said, man, a lot of the girls said, we wish we ate breakfast together as a family. A lot of times parents miss it because they're so busy. Life is so busy in our culture that we don't eat together. We don't eat together. We usually, until we got to high school, we ate suppers together, probably 5-6 nights a week. And then high school, we would try to work around. And once all these sports and everything started, it became a little more difficult. But we normally ate together at breakfast and tried to eat together at dinner. That made a huge difference. You helped us grow too, Sarah. You know what?
Oh, yeah.
You know, parents, we didn't know what we were doing. You know, we had never been parents before. Duh. And I grew up in a chaotic family that was very lax. 10 kids. We had kids raising kids. You did a few chores and you played. My wife grew up in a family that was very controlling and legalistic. And so what do you think happened when we got married? Miss Control and Mr. Chaotic. Okay. Miss Legalistic and Mr. Lax. And one thing, getting married, I mean, we saw that about 3 days into the marriage. And it wasn't too bad until we had kids. You think our views on discipline and life and rearing children were different? Man, as far as night as day. So God used Sarah to grow us. That wasn't, we were learning. We had never done it before, obviously, and we had to learn through the process. So don't need perfect parents. We were not perfect at all. We had all kinds of issues, and we were living them out with our kids. We'll see that a little bit later here. Second question, what are some challenges you faced in your home as the firstborn and only daughter? And this leads into those issues.
I was just going to call that guinea pig parenting.
Well, you should have told me this ahead of time, Sam. And it was. Go ahead.
I think being the firstborn and now having children of my own, they are a guinea pig. You don't know how you're going to be. You can look back to your parents, and I think some things you say, I will do exactly the opposite, and then some things you end up doing exactly the same that are good, and some that you wish you were not doing exactly the same. So as being the firstborn, that's just tricky in and of itself. There's so much expectation, and I can't think of another word, but just that being a people pleaser and all these things that for me personally, I had to journey through to get to the place where I was at peace with who I was. I don't think they intentionally put that on me, but I definitely always felt that in my life. And being an only daughter, I always wanted a sister. I wanted like a built-in BFF, my best friend. And I didn't have that. I had two brothers, and they always played together. And if I played with them, we were playing Tonka trucks or Army or Slingy Mud. So I wanted a sister, but God saw fit another way. So I think that's all I have for that one.
Is that it for that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing, while we did many things wrong through this concept of parenting, and we were working on our issues at the same time, God bless. We loved Christ, and we tried to do the best we could with what we had and who we were. And it was more about growing us than growing our kids. There were some struggles. I remember one time, maybe I better save that for another question. Okay.
Okay.
At what point did your faith become your own, and how did your parents influence that?
Starting from the beginning, we were in a very legalistic church. And so I grew up in church culture. I mean, my dad's a pastor. We didn't have many non-church friends, non-Christian friends. I wasn't really exposed to the world outside of church. And that was really hard for me. I didn't really realize that it was a turmoil for me until I got older and was trying to bust at the seams beyond church culture and just being a church Christian. It's kind of going into the next question, but
that's good.
My parents always put God in my life. And I mean, we were always in church. Back then, it was church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday. I mean, we lived like 3 blocks from the church. So my life outside of church, there really wasn't one, but my life was completely in the church, although I wasn't completely in my heart in church, but it was all that I knew. We went to Awana. We memorized so many verses, and all those things were really great. I don't wish that they were different, but I think part of that was my parents' journey, too, in figuring out their faith. You know, Dad was in church. My mom was playing the piano. She was doing Bible studies. I mean, so everything was just centered around this. And even when we moved here from Seattle, I was 20. I could have stayed in Seattle and just had my life up there. But I decided I wanted to come with my family because I had two younger brothers. And I would always be a stranger here. I would come to Sacramento. I wouldn't know anybody. I wouldn't know my parents, my family's home, church, or city, their friends. So that was, I think, a key point in my life for moving here. I lived at home for a few years. I had a job because I moved in the middle of college, and I thought, well, I'll just work for a year so I can become a resident so I don't have to pay out-of-state fees for college. Well, I never went back. You start working, you get some money. What's the point for school? So Dad says one day, you know, there's families in our church that are living off of what you make. You could start paying a little bit of rent. I'm like, all right, I'll pay rent somewhere else and live on my own. But I think it was really good. As a firstborn, I needed, my wings kind of clipped for me and a little out the door. And I wouldn't take those 2 to 3 years back at all. I loved being on my own. It gave me my own set of independence away from them and being able to stand on my own 2 feet and maneuver through that time without living on the coattails of my parents in their faith or in their life or period. And they loved it. I mean, they helped me move, and I had a great little apartment downtown. I loved it. And that's where I met my husband, Guy. So all of these points, church is always in my life, and I'm always wanting and drawn being part of it, Bible studies. And I would say when I moved down there, I think that's when my faith got tried and became more true, and then married Guy. I think when we came together, we started having our children, family, marriage and family. That's when God really started knocking more on my heart and pulling me towards Him and showing me the ways in which I needed to grow beyond and to be more real with Him, and it would not just be a culture, not just be a way that I lived, but to be truly from my heart. And it came through some pain and having to work through that. But I wouldn't also trade that for the world either, because it's made me who I am today. And the freedom that I have in Christ, being raised with guilt and shame and coming from the legalistic world to now knowing what love and grace is, and it doesn't matter what I do or who I am, that He loves me wholly. So,
you know, in our first church, it was a good church, and yet it was there was a narrowness there. And after 12 years, in fact, about 10 years, I realized I was outgrowing the church. Where I was in my own heart spiritually wasn't where the church was, and they weren't turning. And there were times when I first went there, one of the first questions they asked, at the time I started as a pastor there, I wasn't married. Kathy and I were engaged. I started there in June, or in May of 74. We got married in June of 74. And so as we went through the process of candidating at this church, one of the questions was, what's your wife going to do in church? And they'd come up with a culture where the wife was the assistant pastor. I mean, that's just kind of the way it was. And yet, in my heart, in Kathy's heart, we never felt that way. I said, my wife's going to do what your wives do. What do your wives do? Okay. They taught Sunday school. They played the piano. Or they did certain things, but they weren't on staff. And so from the get-go, we pretty well determined Kathy was going to be a stay-at-home mom. And she was primarily going to work on family and ministry. Not ministry. And the ministry would be an outgrowth of that. And I know when our kids were little, one time one of the teachers said, you shouldn't be doing that. You're the pastor's kid. When I heard about that, I went to the teacher. I said, don't you ever tell my kid to do something because they're a pastor's kid. It's either right or it's wrong. So they started putting pressure on our kids. One day, they told me a story about how Sarah jumped out the window and started running away from Sunday school. I thought, whoa. I thought, well, if I was in that class, I might think about that too. No. And so, I mean, all these different things that happened. So we had a good time. There was a great church for us. But at the same time, we were going through changes. And then what Sarah said about moving out of our house, that was hard. We wanted our kids to be there if they could, until they got married. And when Sarah, I said, hey, We're going to start charging rent next month. It's going to be $300. She said, I can't believe my parents are charging your rent. Our point wasn't to move her out of the house. Our point was to help her become more disciplined. And maybe that was our approach. Maybe it was right or wrong. I don't know. She was making good money. She knew the jeweler on a first name basis. And her closet looked like Imelda Marcus, you know, the shoes. And she had car payments. I mean, and she could have paid her car off two or three times. And I thought, you know, I'm not helping her. We're not helping her. And so actually, once she moved out, we had more dinners together than when the last couple of years. Because she came 2 weeks later and said, it's expensive out there. So she came home. We were eating a lot. And in fact, sometimes she'd come shopping in our pantry.
I don't remember that.
Do you remember that?
No.
I remember mom saying, hey, this isn't the grocery store. But we had some good times.
That was one of the boys.
Oh, that was one of the boys. Okay. So these are just different sides of the same story. But it's just part of that challenge of how your faith becomes your own. So again, we were just trying to guide the best we could, but I can't give Sarah faith. We can live it out, but I can't give it to her. And God was putting that in her heart, and Sarai was becoming Sarah, a princess. Sarah, the next question, as a mom, what are some challenges bring up your daughter and your sons? There's Sarah, by the way, and that's Jonathan. Sarah's probably about 4, John's probably about 2. And I don't know what's going on there, but it doesn't look good.
It looks like a birthday.
I think it is a birthday.
I don't even think I've ever seen that picture.
I think it is a birthday.
I don't know where you found that. Being a mom, it's a constant growth spurt. For me personally, spiritually, just my own humanity, the kids are such a mirror to who you are, and they always come up with the ugliest traits that you don't want to see about yourself, but they're so much a part of you, and they just know you beyond the ways that you even know that they know you. Probably that's just coming through you. That's the interesting blessing that God gives us. So that's a challenge, but I think it's also a blessing because then you can see the ways that God has for you and the areas He wants you to grow. I think disciplining my children is very difficult. They each have their own personality and own character, and you have to meet them in a different way. And for me, disciplining, you know, where Enzo just turned 11, I find that the more I'm living under the Lord's discipline and walking with Him, the easier it is for me to correct the ways of my children. But when I'm a little more lax in my life, I relax on them. And that's not to their benefit, but that's the ebb and flow of life. And that's real life. And that's tough. And then just loving them, loving each of them for who they are and the way that God made them and getting to know what that is. It's constant because they're growing and they're maturing. And we're trying to keep up with them in some ways. And I think in some ways they're trying to keep up with us. Challenges bringing up your daughter. Yeah, I think that's in a nutshell.
No, I heard somebody say years and years ago, you have 18 summers to pull it off, or 18 winters, from an Indian expression. But that's not totally true. There's a point where that's true, but you can still minister to your kids' lives. 19, 20, 30, 35. There's still a ministry going on, and so you're not limited by the 18 summers. And what Sarah said about your kids bring up your weaknesses and the ugliness in your own life, it's like God's giving you another chance to grow up. And God's using your children in your life to actually help you become a mom or a dad, a man or a woman, to show your weaknesses and your need for Christ to trust Him in a special way. That's very important. How has God designed you, Sarah?
Well, God designed me to love fiercely. That has been a journey in and of itself. As a young girl, I always had friends that my parents maybe saw as a little undesirable. Maybe they wished I had different friends that had a more whole life. But most of the people that God brought into my life, and even looking back all the way to first, second, third grade, throughout all of my entire life, He has always had people in my life that had a big gaping hole in their heart, that didn't know Lord, didn't know love, the Father's love. And I remember them saying, oh man, we wish we'd get some different friends. Why are you hanging? And I can understand, because there's a way I had to maneuver through that and find my own boundaries within my own gifting. But loving fiercely, evangelism ends up being who God has me being.
Mm-hmm. Sarah has the gift of evangelism. She also has the gift of encouragement and exhortation. And as a result, a lot of these ladies and friends came into her life, and we were trying to figure, what's going on here? Well, actually what was happening is they were gravitating toward her because she had something they didn't, and she kept giving out Christ to them, and that came out in many, many different ways. She would counsel them in high school. I don't know what they call it now, but a peer helper or peer counselor, mm-hmm. or whatever. That was Sarah. It just naturally happened. And so here's all these friends coming over. Like, okay. And she always did have a few Christian friends. And so there was a balance there. But sometimes that was a tough situation for us as parents. But what we weren't seeing is how she was gifted, how she was made. And so we were more concerned about controlling and protecting. And God was concerned about, hey, she's in an area where I placed her so she can be a light right there in the school where God wanted her to be. So a lot of these friends would come over. We have a good time with them. But I thought, what is going on here?
A few have come to the Lord, and it's been an exciting day. And I will say, I didn't ask for this gift, and the deeper that I fall into it, it has really great joy and really deep pain.
Well, even where Sarah is now in her neighborhood, there's all kinds of people. In fact, Sarah and Guy move in a neighborhood when they lived down in, was it Midtown or down there? I mean, they're in there a few weeks. She's having the neighbors in for dinner. She knows Ed and, is it Ed and what's his name?
Gloria.
Ed and Gloria. I mean, they're a couple in their 70s and they'll bring over tomatoes and stuff. Sarah cooks them, bakes some cookies, and here's little Enzo and Luca going by. Hi, Ed. Hi, Grandpa Ed, you know. So they get to know all the neighbors. They had a couple friends. They had single friends. They had lesbian friends. They had everybody in their neighborhood. I mean, they were just befriending. And I remember one time I went out to a trick-or-treat thing on Halloween. And I think Guy and I were with the kids. Sarah was home because I think...
somebody was sick.
Stella was little or something, or somebody was sick. And so here Guy and I are out here, and there's about 15 other people, and they're all women. I thought, where's all the husbands? And Guy said, Rich, half of these gals are lesbians. I said, oh, I didn't know. So, obviously I didn't know. But the point is, and that wasn't a negative. The negative thing, they were reaching out to their neighbors. You see, it doesn't matter what your sin choice is. Your sin choice is probably a little bit different. But you have a sin choice. The point is, they were reaching out to their neighbors. And so, they got involved in the neighborhood. They moved to the neighborhood where they're about 3 blocks from us. Sarah gets to know all the neighbors. So we're going to all these parties at Sarah's house, and here's 5, 10, 15 different families or couples. I knew a few of them because we lived in that neighborhood at one time. I hardly knew any of them, though. So they get involved in a turkey bowl game, a Thanksgiving football game, and Guy kind of helps lead that. Here's all these neighbors. And as a result of that, Sarah has a neighbor friend who comes to know Christ. And just about a year or so ago, in May, she passed away. She was 43. She had cancer. She had another friend that she ministered to from work from about 10 to 15 years ago. And she died in her 30s just a number of months ago. And so here's people that God brought into Sarah's life that she's ministering to, helping to come to know Christ. And then they're with Christ. And who would expect a 30-year-old or a 40-year-old to pass away? But Sarah had an impact on their lives. She helped bring them to Christ. And she's still having impact on many of those families in her neighborhood. That's so encouraging for us. She has a gift of evangelism and encouragement and exhortation. She loves to study. She's in a Bible study, and she'll often call me, Dad, what's this mean? What's this mean? I said, Sarah, I'm going to get you a good commentary. She said, I'd love that. I mean, how many girls, ladies, moms in their mid-30s are saying, I'd love a commentary for my birthday? I mean, the point is, she was studying, and she wanted something that would help her grow in her faith, and that's so encouraging for me as a dad. God's designed you with the gift of evangelism and encouragement. Keep using that for Christ's glory. We're going to look at a little video here for just 2 or 3 minutes. We can sit here and look. And just, why do girls, in fact, the question is, why do girls, women, females think so critically of themselves? And you'll see it in this video, and then we're going to respond to that.
I'm a forensic artist, worked for the San Jose Police Department from 1995 to 2011.
I showed up to a place I'd never been, and there was a guy with a drafting board.
We couldn't see them, they couldn't see us.
Tell me about your hair.
I didn't know what he was doing, but then I could tell after several questions that he was drawing me.
Tell me about your chin.
It kind of protrudes a little bit, especially when I smile.
Your jaw?
My mom told me I had a big jaw.
What would be your most prominent feature?
I kind of have a fat, rounder face.
The older I've gotten, the more freckles I've gotten.
I would say I have a pretty big forehead.
Once I get a sketch, I say thank you very much, and then they leave. I don't see them.
All I had been told before the sketch was to get friendly with this other woman, Chloe.
Today I'm going to ask you some questions about a person you met earlier, and I'm going to ask you some general questions about their face.
She was thin, so you could see her cheekbones. And her chin, it was a nice, thin chin.
She had nice eyes. They lit up when she spoke.
Cute nose.
She had blue eyes, very nice blue eyes.
So here we are. This is the sketch that you helped me create. And that's a sketch that somebody described of you.
So yeah, that's... She looks closed off and fatter, sadder too. The second one looks more open, friendly, and happy. I should be more grateful of my natural beauty. It impacts the choices and the friends that we make, the jobs we apply for, how we treat our children. It impacts everything. It couldn't be more critical to your happiness.
Do you think you're more beautiful than you say?
Yeah. Yeah. We spend a lot of time as women analyzing and trying to fix the things that aren't quite right. And we should spend more time appreciating the things that we do like.
Ladies, women, God made you beautiful. You see these sketches, and the ladies talk about the things that are negative about them or wrong about them. And when others saw them, they talked about the things that were beautiful. What is there? I think because God made you to take something in, making something beautiful out of it, you're trying to rearrange it somehow. And that's not always bad. God designed you that way. But how do you begin to see the person you are, the beauty that's within you, instead of seeing that's the things that aren't there? Sarah, why do girls and women think critically of themselves?
You know, at the root of it, it really is that they don't know how the Father sees them. And so many women grew up without a loving father or no father or someone who was super critical. I mean, that one girl said, my mother told me I had a big jaw. How horrible. I mean, even your slightest observation of your child can be lifelong living in their head, and that's I think we have to realize the power of our words with our kids, no matter what our observation is. If it can be so slight and have such an effect, but at the bottom of it, it really is who you are in the Lord. And I could be so critical of myself, I don't like this or like that, and I can try to fix this and fix that, but then I'm just chasing the wind. I'll never be good enough. At some point, you just have to become secure and confident in who the Lord has you to be. And that's different for everybody. You all are individually gifted. He's giving you something beautiful, and you are beautiful. I have some friends that are so magnificent and radiant, and by the world standards, they might not be gorgeous at all. But I think they're stunning. And that is always from within. And you know, you've met these people. You see their light come out. And that is where your true beauty is. You have to live beyond your own critique and the critique that you've gotten from others. And that's a work in process. And women, I mean, it's hard in our generation, our time in this world. Everything is so external. Could you be skinnier? Could you be prettier? Could you eat less? I mean, there's so much focus. It's absolutely disgusting. If they would spend half that much time on the inside, they'd be much better off.
That's so important. Sarah's into making beauty. She cooks. You ought to see the meals she cooks. And she didn't learn a lot at home. I mean, Kathy's a good cook, but Sarah's just taken off on that, and she just loves to cook. For my birthdays, my kids buy me clothes. They're saying, come on, Dad, it's 2014. Okay? So they're kind of dressing me now. All right, so if you don't like it, here's the designer.
He picked this shirt out. He did a good job.
I'm not blaming all this. I picked this out. But you don't have to clap for my clothes. I mean, come on. We got bigger things than this to talk about. But the point is, my kids keep me young, and I appreciate the beauty that you bring into my life, Sarah. Thank you very much. Oh, boy, we're going to hit a hot topic here. When did you start dating?
That's really a
not
short
at that
answer.
Age.
I was
going to
say, that was like third grade. That was definitely... I don't know how they got in there. I had to be 16, and that was the rule. So we moved to Seattle when I was about 14, started my freshman year. All the guys were asking me out, and I can't date because I'm not 16. So I turned 16, and I have no dates. Murphy's Law, right?
So they've been asking you out. Sarah's beautiful. I mean, when she was a freshman, she looked like she was a freshman in college. And so all these guys are asking out. Did you tell them you couldn't date till you were 16, or did you just kind of push them off? Or
I don't even remember.
Anyway, I remember something.
Well, somehow they found out that my dad was a pastor. I didn't really go around advertising that. So, yeah, then it became to be, oh, your dad's a priest, your dad's a pastor. Oh, yeah, well, you can't ask Sarah out. So I didn't really date a whole lot at all, actually.
Yes.
It was probably better that way. Truly.
No, but anyway, I remember after her 16th birthday, a couple months after her 16th birthday, she said to me one day, she said, we're at supper. She said, you know what, Dad? I don't have any dates because of you. I mean, this came out of nowhere. I said, what did I do? She said, why can't nobody, they know I can't date unless they ask you or talk to you first. I said, I didn't tell anybody that. Did you put a notice up on a bulletin board at school? Or, of course, then you couldn't text everybody. I mean, how did they know that? Then she realized, oh. So I said, Sarah, you want to know why you don't have any dates? I said, I'll tell you why. You're very beautiful. You know what you believe. And the average guy in school doesn't know what to do with you. That's why you don't have any dates.
And the truth.
Yeah. The ones who do know or do want to do something, you don't want to be them around them anyway. Yeah. So I just told her the truth. And I think you said after that, a couple years later, you said, thanks, Dad. Even then you said, thanks, Dad. But
yeah, I think men are intimidated by someone who has a strong belief system, regardless of what your belief is. If you are an empowered person, that's I think, intimidating to some men.
Yeah.
Boys, whatever. Yeah, I should have been dating at 16 anyway. Okay, but I do have to say that my dad was my very first date. We lived in Seattle at the time, and he took me out on a very fancy date. We went to the Space Needle. And he opened my door, and did we go to a play or something? I don't even remember all the details. I just remember that he was my first date. He wanted to show me on a date how every boy, man, should treat me while I was being taken out.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a great day. We had a fun time. That was good. After high school, I think a few months after high school, Sarah said, you know what, Dad, I'm thankful I didn't date that much. I see all the girls in my school were dating, and some of them got pregnant, and they were going to marry this guy this month, and 2 months later, the next guy. That some of them had, you know, if they could have been, they would have been married 5 times out of high school and before they even got out. So she says, I'm thankful I didn't date a whole lot. They were doing a lot of group activities, and we weren't trying to press that. It was just, it kind of worked itself out, so it turned out.
Yeah,
okay.
I had a lot of friends, and I played sports, so I was busy, and I had fun being with them and being active.
Yep.
So it wasn't like I was sitting at home boo-hooing, but I was at some point like, hey, why is no one taking an interest in me? But God had it that way for a reason, and I think it was a blessing.
Should we not get in maybe the first guy you're dating, remember?
Yeah, let's not.
Okay. To make a big point small, when Sarah dated too, a lot of times if there were some struggles there, they'd come home. They would eat with us. We'd have some dates together. They'd be in the backyard or something and having a dinner or something or whatever. We'd be eating with them and we'd play some games and we'd get to know her dates. And we did that with our boys too. They'd bring girls over and we just have a fun time just as a family. So it was a fun time. It was also, you know, some protection and some help, hope and help, hopefully. But we won't
control.
Control.
No, but it is good. I mean, now being a parent and seeing my own children, do I want them to be out meandering the mall or wherever the kids go now? Or would I rather have them at my home and hanging out with us and getting to know us? Because truly, I mean, is someone going to get married at 16? I hope not. So that's the whole point of dating to marriage. So you do need a boyfriend. It could be a nice comrade, but it's better to just have friends and not worry so much about who your value is in another person as they see you. It's knowing who your value is and who the Lord has you to be.
It worked out. We didn't know what we were doing, but we're trying to work through it. The next question, I think we've already, why and when did you move out? How did this affect your relationship with your parents and God?
Yeah.
I think we looked at that one, didn't we?
Yeah, we kind of went over that in an earlier one.
Okay. Let's take a look at the next question. Knowing what you know now, how would you encourage parents of young ladies to have meaningful relationships? That's a picture of us, by the way. That's Lake Arrowhead behind us. And that's a picture of us at Lake Arrowhead this last summer. We were there, and like Sarah said, we've probably taken 20 vacations there out of your first 25 years or whatever of existence, and just have a lot of great memories there at Lake Arrowhead.
The biggest encouragement I can give to parents is to really dig into who you are in the Lord. At some point, you have to either, I tell this to Enzo because he's old enough now, are you going to do what you want to do, or are you going to surrender your will to me? That's obedience. And that's what the Father asked us to do with him. The biggest thing that you can give your kids is surrendering your will to him. He will transform you, and then you will be the parent that he wants you to be to your kids. That's hard. It's continuous. And sometimes you just want a break. Beyond that is just being involved with your kids. Like my parents, have your friends over, have their friends over to your house. Get to know who they're with. A lot of times kids are going to tell their friends things that they're not going to tell their parents. So you can almost pick the kid's friend brain and you're going to hear what you don't hear from your kids. And part of that is normal. And then part, I think it just depends on the relationship that you have with your kids. So be involved with them. Do what they want to do. Don't make them do what you want to do. Maybe a little bit. They can come on your side. I remember this one time, one of my girlfriends had a boyfriend who was in a local band. And so we went to all the shows around town and we were little groupies. And it was kind of funny now looking back. But
that was here in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. So my dad says, okay, I'm going to go to one of these shows. I want to see what you're doing every weekend. Like, who are your friends? What are you doing? Where are you going? So here we go to this club downtown.
It wasn't Christian.
Yeah, it wasn't. But I thought it was a great moment. Here I was living the life that I had chosen for me at that point, and he wanted to come into my world and see what I was doing and who I was with. And that was a poignant moment for me to see that he would, what are the other things, lay aside your judgment of what you think about what I'm doing and accept it, become involved in it. It doesn't mean you condone it. It means if that's where they're at right then, that's where you meet them. And hilariously enough, he was wearing a shirt like this, so everyone thought he was the manager of the band, so they kept buying him beverages.
Kept buying him all these drinks.
Yeah, like, he doesn't drink, so pass him on to someone else. And, you know, back to loving fiercely. It is, and until you really know the Father's love for you, it's going to be really hard to love. You can love out of your deficit, but that will only take you so far, and your kids will always know that. I knew that even with my parents. They've worked hard in their journey with the Lord, but as a kid, you can see that. Kids are so smart. And I maybe at 10 years old can say, oh, my parents are loving me out of their weaknesses, but I felt it and I knew it. So just seeing them as they grew in their walk with the Lord and each other, that affected me and how I grew and matured in my life and in my walk. And always just valuing them for who God made them to be, because they're going to be different than you. I have one child who's very much like me. That's easier because I can understand and relate. The others are not like me at all. And that's tricky. It takes me going outside of who I am and what makes me comfortable to figure out where to meet them at. And that's, I think, ways that you can encourage parents of young ladies to have meaningful relationship is when you have the meaningful one with the Lord first.
That's great. Thanks, sir. Then last question. I think you guys put this down. What's your dad's role in your life today?
Well, actually, Guy wrote that. So
your
kudos
husband wrote
to Guy.
That
yes.
One, huh?
My dad's role in my life today. When I was little, everyone at church called him Pastor Sherman. That was just who he was. So I end up calling Daddy Pastor Sherman because, you know, that's his title. So my dad, there we are at our house a few New Year's ago. He's one of my best friends. And I think that says a lot. How many kids at 38 actually want to hang out with their parents? He loves me. He loves my husband. He loves my children. He probably doesn't agree with everything that I do in my life or how I'm raising my kids. But that he never says anything about that. If I ask for encouragement or advice, he will give it to me. If I need discernment in an issue in my life, I can turn to him. And I appreciate what he says, even if I don't agree with it, although most times I do. We live about 4 blocks from each other, so he's at our house a lot. I mean, and we purposely moved up here about 4 years ago now, and it's been great being closer to them. Having my kids grow up with Grandpa, I mean, he'll take them to a Granite Bay game on a Friday night, or he'll drive them to school once a week, or bring them to church on Sunday morning early. So just there's just a lot of involvement, and in some ways it's like I didn't really move out from home because we're so close, but he watches the kids. We went to a funeral on Friday night, and he was at our house for 8 hours with all the kids. He picked them up from school. He gave them dinner, put them in bed. So he's truly involved and a part of my life.
I love you, Sarah. I love your kids. That's great. You know, you might have questions. I think we're going to take a few moments for questions, okay? Maybe you've texted some in. Sarah, I just want to say I'm proud of you. I love you. Proverbs 31, you know, talks about this woman. Beauty is fleeting and charm is okay, but it's there for a while. But it says a woman who loves the Lord, she'll be praised. A woman who fears the Lord, she'll be praised by her husband and by her children and by her father. It doesn't say that, but I'm adding that. It says her own works will reward her. What you're receiving from your hand, Sarah, is what you've given out to others, and it's coming back to you in spades. And you're blessed because you love Jesus and you're walking with him. So that's so encouraging. Hi, Rachel. Maybe you have a couple questions.
Yeah, I do have a couple. As a father, how can I balance protecting my daughter from the world and let her be used by God in the world?
That's a hard one. I would say try to recognize how she's made, how she's designed, what her gifts are. If I could have recognized that earlier, that Sarah's gift was actually evangelism and counseling, exhortation and encouragement, then I would have realized there was a reason these girls were all attracted to her, because she had something to give to them. Even some of the guys, she had something to give to them. So instead of trying to, I'd say the focus shouldn't be protecting, it should be loving. And when you love, you do protect, but it's for a different reason. Otherwise, you're trying to protect and control. When you protect out of control, it's going to come back and bite you. When you protect out of love and nurture, then it's releasing instead of controlling.
What is the best way to enforce modesty for my teenage daughter without making her hate me? Ugh. Either one of you.
I think there's too many years of work prior to that point. And that's the hard. I don't know once you get there how you can turn that one around. How old are they? I mean, teenage, that could be like 13 or 18. At some point you have to let them go. And they're hopefully, I think if they're dressing immodestly, they're still looking for an affirmation externally or from the world. And I would just pray for them. Pray for your daughter, however old she is. I mean, even practically, how God can help you love her to the point where she won't want that kind of wear. I mean, it seems kind of ridiculous on some level, but ultimately what you're all having on the outside is coming from the inside. So reevaluate.
What Sarah said, there's just too many years of work before that. I mean, she's not there yet, but by the way she's training your kids, that's going to change the way they think about dress. When a girl's doing that at age, 12, 14, 18, whatever it is, it's that affirmation, attention thing. And it usually says there's been lapses in their life growing up. If she feels good about herself and beautiful on the inside, they don't usually have to attract attention that way. So it's what happens at ages 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 that determines what's going to be happening then.
We raised our daughter strictly and biblically. She resents us now and is backslidden. What can we do to restore our relationship with her?
Stop judging her and just love her. Meet her where she is. Strict, that's a hard one, because I think for a lot of years my parents were ultra strict, and it erred on the side of legalists. It's just rules with no relationship. You're going to gain resentment from that. Just relationship with love, and it's going to be, that's part of the disappointment. You have to kind of walk through on your own, and you can't put that on her. That's something that you have to reckon with, and just love her.
Those two words, strictly and biblically, they're actually opposites. We think they're the same. We had to grow as we were growing, rearing our kids, that being strict and biblical, we felt that was together. It was just the opposite. The Bible frees you. Christ frees you. You'll know if you know the truth sets you free. If the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. The truth sets us free. And when we try to be strict, what we're actually giving our daughters and our sons is a wrong biblical or wrong perspective of what the Bible says, who Jesus is. Stand fast in the liberty wherever the Christ has set you free, it says in Galatians 5:1. And so that strictness, what your kids just saw, is legalism and narrowness that was more Pharisaical than Christ-like. And when they see Jesus Christ, then what your kids are probably rejecting is you and your version of Christianity. They're not rejecting the real Jesus. They're rejecting a false Christ that is Pharisaical, and they've made strict Christian. Put those two things together, and they've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. So that's a great question.
One more for Sarah. What is your favorite childhood memory with you and your dad?
Besides the laying in bed at night and just talking and praying, we almost always had a pool. So in the summer, we'd get Dad to play with us in the water, and he'd always throw us in the pool, which we called the drink. You know, if you're a pirate, you fall into the drink if you're being walked off the plank. So we played mateys in the drink, and he would just always throw us, and we would try and fight him and not get pushed in, but he'd end up throwing us as high as he could, and we'd splash in the water. I mean, he even plays it now with the boys, well, and Stella, and they love it. So mateys in the drink is still continuing all those years later.
Yeah, good. Thanks, sir. Good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. This has been so encouraging for me. God's good. Love your kids. If your kids are rejecting you or rejecting Christ or rejecting Christianity, take an evaluation of what they're really rejecting. Help them to see the real Jesus. And maybe the best thing you do to your kids is go to them and apologize. Say, you know, I need to ask you for forgiveness. But come back to that one question, legalism and strictness and biblical. I made those the same, and that's what you saw, and that's so wrong of me. And that's not who Jesus is. And it's not too late to apologize to your kids. And maybe they'll say, you know what? Maybe mom and dad are changing, and maybe they're growing. And maybe this Christ is real, and Christianity is real. And maybe what I've rejected is a false view, a human view of what Christ is and who he is, instead of Christ's view of who he is. Think about it. Think through it. God bless you.